chaka, ooga, 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 chaka, ooga, 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 chaka, ooga, 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 chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright. I'm hooked on a feeling.
Yeah, give it up for the band. We're not even going to just play tracks anymore. We're just going to do these songs. Oh, I love that song. Have you guys ever heard that song before? I love it, man. I put it on like repeat like 10 times this week when I was getting ready for this morning's message. I thought, how apropos for the marriage series. This last couple of weeks, we started a new series for those of you that are guests with us called Marriage Hacks. There has to be a better way. And if you've never looked up any life hacks, man, there's so many good ones. Like if your gear shift is really hot on a summer day, you can take a koozie and turn it and put it on top of it. Boom, problem solved. You could take a muffin tray and you could use it for your condiments. You could just fill them up with your different sauces and different toppings. Man, life hack. You could take newspapers and put them in the bottom of your trash can, and if anything spills, it'll absorb all the juices so you don't have all that nasty mess. I'm throwing out knowledge to you right now, all right? Life-changing knowledge. And so whenever we think of marriage hacks, we have to think we're all going to go through struggles, right? We're all going to go through periods where things are not as good as they should be. And today I want to talk to you about some of the ways that we get to those places where we're distracted and there's division, and then that division can lead to destruction if it's unchecked, unmitigated. And then what is the antidote to those distractions? And as I was thinking about that song, man, he's singing about hooked on a feeling. And I thought, that is the way marriage begins, right? Everybody, when you, hopefully, all right, you hope you didn't start off bad, but I'm just going to assume the best in all of you here this morning, that you started off and you were hooked on a feeling, right? You were high on believing that they were in love with you and you were in love with them. I read an author several years ago, and he described the process of marriage in our Western culture. And that song, to me, describes the ideal, right? The ideal. We all start off in the ideal, and we're super excited about the person that we're going to spend the rest of our life with. I mean, you guys remember when you got all dressed up on your wedding day and they were playing your song and you were walking down the aisle and the husband was sitting up there so proud. That's my bride. That's my baby. That's my boo right there, you know. The ideal. And not too long after the ideal sets in, right? The next step in the phases of relationship is the ideal turns to the ordeal. And you realize that when Prince Charming, when you get a closer look, there's some warts, right? And when Sleeping Beauty wakes up in the morning, she doesn't appear quite the same as she did at the altar. And so the ideal quickly can pivot to the ordeal. And in our life group, we're actually studying a marriage series from Craig Rochelle up at Life Church. And he said, we tend to, you know, idealize their things about their personality type. And then when we get in our flesh, we tend to demonize the very things that we used to idealize. And let me bring that home and make it practical for you. Whenever the ideal is turned to the ordeal, you'll take someone who's super ambitious, right? Like, say you married someone that was super ambitious, and you're like, man, look how driven they are. Look how driven they are. And then you get married, and you're married for a little while, and they're working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And now the very thing that you looked at as their strength, you begin to demonize as their weakness. You marry someone, that's incredibly fun. Oh my gosh, life of the party. Woo! I mean, it's just so much fun to be around them. And then you're not married too long, and you see that that comes at a cost, that maybe they're flippant in some areas that you would like them to be more structured in. You marry someone who's steady, like a rock. I mean, steady, consistent, never way up high, never way down low. And then you start getting into arguments, and you want some level of response, some level of reaction, and they refuse to give it to you. The things that draw us to people. You marry someone who's a researcher, who's a detailed person, and you love it. You love it when you're dating them because they always get everything just right. And then you get married, and you're not married very long, where you're like, really, do we have to do that way every time? Because they're robotic, right? I even see people come into church. I know their personality type because, you know, our ushers will try to funnel people, and they're like, no, must go left. The section is already full. We have like no people on the right, but they're like, no, I go left. That's what I do, okay? And so it's just interesting that the things that draw us to the people is also the thing that we tend to begin to demonize whenever we are in our flesh, whenever God is not the centerpiece of our relationship. So the ideal turns to the ordeal, and then if unmitigated, the ordeal causes us to start to look for a new deal. And man, if you're somewhere on that spectrum this morning, I hope that you will listen to me, because we can fix this, all right? There is a better way. God has a better way. Before it's too late, there is a better way. The last 2 weeks, we've shared with you some awesome marriage hacks. If you weren't here, go back, listen to them. They're posted online, easy to have access to. And I encourage you that we have these resources, and the way that we video everything and the way we package everything, it's to be shared. And I don't think enough of our people take advantage of that opportunity, that if you would just go out, grab the link off YouTube, instead of like the latest funky viral video that everybody's like, oh, check this out, the guy's able to flip 3 water bottles. Okay, whatever, okay? How about post a great marriage series for your friends to be able to have access to? Might just change their life. So whenever we go from the ideal to the ordeal to the new deal, there's a level of distraction. And that's point number one in your message this morning. We'll bring up the slide. We're gonna look at Amos 3:3 and Mark 3:25. And that's gonna be the linchpin for the first half of our message. Amos 3 said, can two walk together unless they agree to do so? And I want you to think about in your marriage that how many times are you walking, but you're not walking together? You're not unified in purpose. You're not unified in your goals. You're not unified in your response to your children. You're not unified in the prioritization of profession versus family versus how we're going to allocate our finances. And that disunity constantly causes friction. Not only Amos 3:3, do two walk together unless they have agreed to do so. Mark 3:25, if a house is divided against itself, it cannot stand. Some of you thought Abraham Lincoln came up with that. Unfortunately, no, it was Jesus. And so a house divided. Man, a house divided. And so I want us to look at a pattern that I see many marriages follow. And that is distraction leads to division, and division leads to destruction. And in marriage, that would equal divorce. The definition of distraction, see if anybody can relate to this in marriage. A condition or state of mind in which the attention is diverted from the original focus or interest. When you got married, I will guarantee you on that day, you were focused, right? I mean, you are laser beam focused. As some of you, you felt the weight, right? You felt the weight of the rest of your life. We even define life stages by taking that next step. And you graduate into a different level of adulthood the moment that you say, I do. Because it's the only contract that is like it in the fleshly realm. That you have a contract with God that extends into eternity, but you make a contract with another human being that is a covenant before God Almighty. And God is the one that unites this holy matrimony. This one singular entity is birthed in this moment of commitment. And there's no other relationship like it, because if you don't like your job, what? You can get a new job. You don't like your car? Like, I hate this car. This car is a piece of trash. I don't like it anymore. I'm going to go get a new car. I mean, you don't like where you live? You go move somewhere else. I mean, you have so many options in life about where you can do and the freedom with which you have. But in the contract of marriage, it's the one contract that you're making that is supposed to be legally binding for the rest of your life. Man, if you don't understand the weight of that commitment going in, what a rude awakening on the other side. I encourage you, as you're raising up your children, it is almost never too soon to begin to preach and to begin to share the message of marriage. I constantly do this with my children about why mom and dad do certain things, and unfortunately, they've seen the shipwrecks along the way already of some of their friends, families that have been in the church, and you know, whatever reason occurs, and marriage breaks apart, and I take that as an opportunity, a teachable moment of how you can avoid this. And I tell them all the time that the person you marry will be the single most deciding factor outside of your relationship with God on your happiness for the rest of your life. Can I get an amen on that? Is that true? You can have the best job in the world, and if you have a terrible marriage, I don't care. Your bank account could be seven figures, and without a good relationship, it'll mean nothing. You can have all the popularity at your workplace, in your neighborhood, whatever it is. Your mom and dad can love you and tell how great you are. But if things aren't right at home, if you're not winning in your most important relationship, everything else will be bitter to the taste. And so how critical is it that we share with them from a very early age what the prioritization is? Find a godly, selfless person. Don't marry for money, don't marry for looks. Find a godly, selfless person. If you want to raise your children to be happy, functioning adults, then you better know what God's criteria is, and then you better press it into them. More than work ethic, more than grades, more than athletics, train them up in the way that they should go. And when they were old, they will not depart from it. Can two walk together unless they be agreed? A house divided against itself cannot stand. Distraction, a condition or state of mind in which the attention is diverted. When you got married, you were focused. That's my bride. That's my baby. I want them to be happy. You did so many things, right? You know, like, oh, I'll go ahead and go cook breakfast. Anybody remember the first couple years when you cooked breakfast and brought it to bed? Anybody ever do that? I did that. It's been years since I've done that, I'll tell you that. We got three kids now, two of them are teenagers. There's so many other prioritizations. You know, I look at marriage and family almost like I'm a general fighting a war, all right? And I got multi-fronts that I've got to constantly be in charge of, right? And so sometimes breakfast in bed is the sacrifice. And so anyway, so as we get married, we become distracted. And it's not like you're intentionally ever distracted, right? It's not like you wake up one day and you're like, you know what, today I'm going to be distracted. I'm not going to focus on you anymore. You have real responsibilities, real things that are pulling at you. And as you get older and as children get older, it only becomes more complex because
now you're dividing so much of you to try to fill all of these holes, and you only have a finite resource in your bank account of emotion, of attention, of hours in a day. And so it can become very quickly overwhelming, because if you've got 10 credits and your life calls for 15 credits this week in order to get through it, then you're going into a deficit. And as you go into deficit week after week after week, if you don't have the correct prioritization, you will give attention to an area that is not high enough on the priority, and then you lose your energy, you lose your passion for the things that are supposed to be the priority, and then what happens? You become distracted, and that distraction begins to lull us into a slumber of numbness, of division, and then you'll hear people say it, and they don't know how to quantify it, so they'll say things like, well, I just don't feel it anymore. I just don't have the passion I used to have. And if you're a flesh-driven person and not a God-driven person, you interpret that inaccurately. You interpret that loss of passion, that division that's growing in you, as some kind of signal to you that you might be moving on to the new deal. Well, this person isn't bringing me what I need. Therefore, the answer is to find a new person. And if I just traded this one in for a new one, then I would find what I'm looking for. Wow. Can I help you before you launch off into this incredible error? That is never going to work. That is never going to work. Your relationship with God has to come supreme and first. And when that relationship satisfies your inner spirit, what you'll find is you'll quit trying to use your spouse to accomplish what only God can. You see, your spouse was never intended to complete you. We just studied this in our life group. You know the Jerry Maguire moment? I know everybody wants to have that, right? Like he comes into the room and you, what? Anybody? You complete me, all right? Have you ever tried to use someone else to complete you? How's that? Has anybody found the perfect person to complete you? Because there's no perfect people. They're sinners. They're broken, just like you. The only perfection that you'll ever find is in Jesus Christ. And if you would put Jesus Christ first and your spouse second, he would complete you, and then you would say, oh, so then I'll be fulfilled. Yeah, what you'll find out is you're filled up to pour out to your number two. So now you're not looking to take or what you can get from your spouse, you're looking to what you can give. Man, have you become distracted this morning? Have you become distracted from the original focus and intent of your marriage to love them supremely, to love them the way that Christ loved the church? Are you moving down the spectrum from the ideal to the ordeal to the new deal? Is your distraction leading to division? And you feel it. I started thinking about this, and I got to hurry up because I get all excited about marriage. And I wanted to give you three pitfalls that I've seen over the years, 26 years of preaching and pastoring. And they are this. Number one, I see people underestimate threats. If I could help you out with anything, every fire that has ever been created starts with a spark. You have to have the conditions, you have to have the resources, but every fire starts with an ignition, a spark. And I see so many couples that they allow things in, and there's a spark there, but they say to themselves, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, one text. Did that ever hurt anybody? Just one text. I mean, it was just a joke. We were just joking around. Just a text, just a lunch. Hey, we work together. We need to talk about some things anyway. It's just her and I. Let's just go have lunch. It's just a lunch. It's just a dinner. I mean, it's just a dinner. I mean, we were out in work business and, you know, we were, you know, bored and, you know, it's in a public setting, so it's a dinner out, just a dinner. And they underestimate threats. I can't tell you how many marriages have been ruined by the friend button on Facebook. You know, we used to date. I just want to say hey. Just want to connect. Friend. Oh, just want to see how you're doing. I haven't seen you in years. It's innocent. You don't tell your spouse that you hit friend, but I mean, you know, it's innocent. Don't worry about it. When we underestimate threats, it always comes back to bite us. You got to be so careful about this circle. Number two, whenever we underestimate threats, we can also go into this tendency of letting things go too far. And that's when underestimating is you discount it. Letting it go too far means that you know it's there, but you think it'll just go away. It'll just go. Parenting, let me explain something to you. If you see disrespect to authority, don't let that go. Don't let that go. Don't let that go. Dads, I'm going to call you out right now. Every father in here, God has called you to be the male role model for your family, whether you like it or not, whether you embrace it or not. And when mom says to little Johnny, go pick up your room, and Johnny says, I don't want to pick it up. Dude, you just right here. Just go to that motion, right? You do it one time. He sees this for the rest of his life. He'll know. It's like a six shooter at the OK Corral, right? Just like. You allow that little stuff and you say to yourself, oh, it's, you know, I've had a hard day. I've been stressed out. And you go into like tunnel dad mode of ignoring that disrespect. I'm telling you, you're courting disaster. You see disrespect, you deal with it swiftly and aggressively. I'm not saying you draw blood. Listen to me. I don't want some hyper-aggressive dad in here like beat their kid today and say, Pastor Tim, say no. I'm saying that there's a sweet spot with the rod of discipline, all right? And they need to know that that behavior is incorrect. And I'm not making this up out of Tim's philosophy of parenting. I'm telling you what the Bible says. It says that he that spares the rod, it's not spoils, go read the Bible. It says hates his child. So you may not want to do it, but God says that discipline is what allows them to even understand God himself. That there's consequences for sin. Imagine if you raise a child that has no fear of God, no fear of consequence. Whenever you don't discipline, that's what you're doing. You're raising them to believe that their behavior is acceptable to their own selves, and they are only accountable to their own selves, and therefore they don't recognize authority in their lives. Man, letting things go too far. Whenever you start to see that divide in your relationship, people are like, it'll swing around. It's like, I gotta work and I gotta get to this next level, so I gotta put in these extra hours. I see the divide happening, but I'm just gonna put my head down and I'm gonna come up for air on the other side of the promotion, of the business, of the launch, and then I'll put it back together. Man, what happens if that divide was so long? It's like holding your breath and you think that you can make it back up, but you don't. You see, you can't ever let anything threaten the circle. I don't have time for number three this morning. I need to move on to the second half of the message. And so I wanted to take this circle, this union that God intended. He says in Matthew chapter 19, that what God has joined together, let no man divide apart. He says, therefore, leaving mother and father, the two shall become one flesh. And I had a quick video I wanted to show you this morning from Meet the Parents, that the father-in-law decided that he was going to explain the circle of trust. And I wanted to share this with you this morning. This will be a fun teaching moment. So let's play this at this time.
With the knowledge you've been given, you are now on the inside of what I like to call the Burns family circle of trust. See, if I can't trust you, Greg, then I have no choice but to put you right back outside the circle. And once you're out, you're out. There's no coming back.
Hmm. Well, I would definitely like to stay inside the circle.
You have my word. I'm going to hold you to that. Circle of trust.
Guess who's back in the circle of trust?
I like to think of it as a little circle of trust.
That circle of trust thing, that's mine.
That is true. I mean, I am still in the Burns family circle of trust, right?
You're firmly in the circle.
Finally.
Let me put it very simply. If your family circle does indeed join my family circle, they'll form a chain. I can't have a chink in my chain.
Yeah, okay. I get the metaphor.
Greg, you're still in the circle of trust, so I'm going to give you one more chance.
That's it. We're starting our own circle of trust. And guess what? You're not in it.
Well, you can't start a circle of trust. It's my circle.
You know what? You don't have a patent on the circle, Jack. And by the way, you're not even in your own circle right now.
That is untrue. I say who's in or out of the circle.
Well, I'm confused. Whose circle am I in?
Nobody's.
You don't have a patent on the circle, Jack. Man, the next time you get into it with your spouse and it's about the in-laws trying to invade the circle, I want you to reference this moment for the rest of your marriage. They don't have the patent on the circle, Jack. And so Greg comes to the conclusion that he needs to create what? His own circle. Man, put the verses back up on the screen. Leaving father and mother, the two shall become one. Man, I want you to think about two concepts as we wrap this message this morning. Number one is that there's to be freedom, and number two, there's to be fusion. In order for you to do marriage God's way, there has to be freedom, and then there has to be fusion. Let's talk about freedom for just a moment. Freedom is whenever we're leaving our past relationships, all of them. There's not one that you take into your marriage. I was going to have a circle up here. I might have it for the second service, but I was going to do a hula hoop, and I wanted to explain to you that there's two people that can fit in your circle, all right? Do you guys know who it is? Husband and wife, right? If you had to stall on that one, then we got problems, all right? Now notice I did not say husband, wife, and children. I didn't say husband, wife, and mama, daddy, grandpa, grandma, your boss, your aunt, your uncle, whoever. No, there's only two people. Are you hearing me? That fit in this circle. I want to give you an illustration, a biblical illustration. It says that the two shall leave. That word leave from the Hebrew, the force of that verb is to widow, to widow. I want you to think about that for a moment. When you stand at the altar, I love you so much. The moment that you say, I do, you are widowing all of your past. All of your past. Your relationship with your parents, the relationships you've had with other people, really close friendships, your BFF. When you stand at the altar and you say, I do, you are widowing, leaving all other relationships. You are leaving, as a matter of fact, much more than that. Your right to think of yourself first. When you say, I do, you are widowing your own self, your self desires, your aspirations, your ambitions. You widow those at the altar for the sake of the person whom you're committing to. You say, well, Tim, I didn't know all of this. Well, you should have read the fine print. It's right there in the Bible. God said that you were to love your wife the way that what? Say it. Christ loved the church and did what? Gave himself up for her. In order for him to save you, he had to sacrifice himself. That's the way it works. You say, well, Tim, I got to have some me in there because I'm going to lose myself in the relationship. And our society talks about, you know, you don't ever want to lose you. You know, you want to maintain you. And I'm telling you, that is so wrong. When you say yes to Jesus, it says, behold, the old has what? Passed away. And behold, some, does it say some has become new? Like a little bit? Like 80% has become, it says, behold, all things have become new. Is that the way you look at marriage? If you want to know why you're distracted, if you want to know why there's division, if you want to know why divorce is knocking on the door, I promise you that there is a level of freedom that you are ignoring and neglecting. Freedom is leaving all of you at the altar, leaving all of your past, leaving all of your relationship hierarchy. Well, mom said she wants us to come home for Christmas. Well, we went home to your mom's every Christmas. Maybe we need to have our own Christmas. The circle, it should never be competed with. There should never even be comparison to. It should be so high in the pantheon of hierarchy in your relationships that your parents don't even dare to interfere, knowing that the consequences would be so severe that it's not even worth broaching the subject. Your children should know that when mom and dad are having mom and dad time, and that door is locked. Lock the door, by the way. I've had some friends that learned that lesson the hard way. And it doesn't mean that things are happening the way that you naughty people are thinking. It means that mom and dad are going to have some time that they visit. And that's going to be uninterrupted. I don't care if someone fell and broke their arm out there. They can still go to the emergency room in a little while. We're going to have 30 minutes of peace and quiet. We might not even say anything. We might just lay there and just stare at each other and hope for better days. But we're going to guard the circle. You let things into that circle, you mess up everything. You let children into that circle, like, oh, well, Johnny's going to come in here and, you know, he's going to sleep in our bed. It's so cute. You know, they want us. No! No, don't do that. If Cy comes into our room, he sleeps in the floor. Not in the bed. He knows. He knows. He knows. That's your place. You get over there on the floor. Mom and dad's in this bed. Freedom. Second one and last one, fusion. Fusion. Look at the definition of fusion. The union of atomic nuclei. We're going to go physics here, so some of you hold your breath. The union of atomic nuclei to form heavier nuclei, resulting in the release of enormous quantities of energy. Is anybody... Does anybody ever get married and that bond caused you some releases of enormous quantities of energy? Anybody ever had any of those explosive moments in marriage? I guarantee you have, right? But there's something that's supposed to happen as you go through those explosive moments. Watch this. Once they're joined together, that these parts cannot be separated into their original entities. When fusion occurs on a physics level, these two things become a unique one thing. And now that one thing is defined by itself. It is not defined by the original properties of the two separate things. Imagine if we understood freedom from our past and then fusion to our spouse. That we would be defined not by our individual properties, that we lost all of that when we experienced freedom, and now we are fused together to where we are indistinguishable as separate entities, so that we are not known as Tim and Carrie, we are known as the Bournes, because we are one. One in life, one in hope, one in destiny. You see, when you get distracted, it leads to division. Division leads to destruction. If you want to come back this morning, you're going to have to do it God's way. You're going to have to experience freedom from all other relationships and freedom from your selfish desires. And you're going to have to choose fusion. The loss of yourself, bonded for all of eternity. And people that have gone through divorces understand this. Even when you go through a divorce, you don't retain your individuality. A part of that relationship follows you for the rest of your life. So I encourage you to understand the seriousness of the circle of trust, that you guard it, that you protect it, that you hold it up on a pedestal, and don't let anything threaten it. If you would do that this morning, I promise you, things would begin to turn. Let's pray. Father, we come before you, and we thank you so much, God, for your word. Your word leads us. It's like a lamp into our feet in a dark, dark world. Whenever we get distracted, it always leads us to wrong thinking. We start thinking about ways out and ways of escape. And God, the solution is not in the escape. The solution is in surrender. Surrendering to God's way instead of ours. Man, if someone in here is moving down that spectrum, I pray, God, that they would turn and they would acknowledge that your way is superior. I pray, Father, for the husbands in here that have been neglecting their responsibility of leadership in the house. That when I ask your children where dad's going, that God is not even in the definition. Man, help us to lead them to where we want them to go. I trust that every parent in here wants their children to find happiness, joy, contentment. And I hope that they simultaneously realize that that's only under a covenant relationship with God in their personal life and in their marriage life. And that everything else would flow from that relationship. God, help us to see clearly this morning any threats that are pressing on our circle. God, I pray this morning that you give the people ears to hear and eyes to see. Would you guys stand with us as we worship?